This is Scenic Roots live in the library. This afternoon we have a session with the guitar picker, writer and singer, Nicholas Edward Williams.
Hey folks, this is Nicholas Edward Williams here with the Library Sessions, and I really want to thank them for having me here today to play some of my tunes and some songs that have been inspired by many artists, and I think that you will enjoy. And this first tune is called Mississippi John, and it's named after Mississippi John Hurt, one of my favorite guitar players, and I'll talk a little bit more about him later on. It goes like this. Mississippi John, the song's still playing even when you're good and gone. The front porch picking under that southern sun. Let it roll, mama, feeling fine and young. Stag and Lee, them blues never pulled a tear out of me. Oh, that Appalachia with that Delta feel. You said you make a word man sing like a salty dog in heat. Now I'm Mississippi John. The song's still playing even when you're good and gone. That front porch picking under that southern sun. Let it roll, mama, I'm feeling fine and young. All right. Down a pallet on your floor. Boogie woogie came, baby, long before rock and roll. Oh, that boy John Henry, he's a hard-working soul. Oh, said that hammer in hand when he died and passed on. Oh, now I'm Mississippi John. The song's still playing even when you're good and gone. Hear that front porch picking under that southern sun. Let it roll, mama, I'm feeling fine and young. Let it roll, mama, I'm feeling fine and young. Come on now. Let it roll, mama, I'm feeling fine and young. That's a tune called Mississippi John, like I said before, and Mississippi John Hurt was quite a mystery to many folks. He recorded a few songs back in the 1920s, and he went back to sharecropping because of the Great Depression didn't allow those songs to be commercially successful. And some blues enthusiasts found him in the 50s after a compilation called the Anthology of American Folk Music came out, and one of the songs had a hint called, the song was called Avalon Blues, and it said Avalon, my hometown, and they found Avalon on a map and went down to find him and made him very successful and gave him his due in the world. And without them, without those recordings, he may have just kind of lived and died in obscurity. Well, this is a brand new tune that I wrote kind of among this situation that we're in. It's kind of hard not to write about these things. And the music and the melody is kind of taken directly from a blues tune called Nobody Knows You When You're Down and Out, which was made a little bit more famous by Scrapper Blackwell, as well as Eric Clapton and Bessie Smith. And I kind of made my own style of... I kind of incorporated different elements of the melody and put them together and then added some new words, and it's called Teeny Weeny Funny World, and it's about all the things that you see out there in the great world we call the online world. There was no news today. Everything was fine, the headlines all said. No worries came to mind, and I wasn't thinking too far down the line. And this is all just a bit strange, to be where we are in this day and age. Everybody's brave behind the screen, but face to face they don't say anything. It's a teeny weeny funny world out there. I know someone you know, man, I swear, who's gone insane beyond repair. It's a teeny weeny funny world out there. It's okay, we don't feel the same. To each their own, no one needs to be shamed. Agree to disagree, I can guarantee you. Wouldn't it be a novel idea? It's a teeny weeny funny world out there. I know someone you know, man, I swear, yeah. They've gone insane on repair. It's a teeny weeny funny world out there. It's a teeny weeny funny world out there. I know someone you know, a man I spit, who's gone insane on repair. It's a teeny weeny funny world out there. There was no news today. Everything was fine, the headlines all said. No worries came to mind. I wasn't thinking too far down the line. All right, so I'm a big fan of country blues, of Piedmont blues, and of traditional American folk music and traditional country music. Not quite a full songster, but I like to think of myself as a half songster at least. And this next tune is a traditional, and throughout this pandemic, I'm going to kind of do a little sidetrack here. Throughout this pandemic, artists and musicians have been obviously heavily affected. We can't do a lot of the things that we normally could do if we were out touring or performing or at large gatherings. And so a lot of people have had to adapt, and I've done the same as most other people and tried to adapt with the times, and started thinking about some of my passions, and musicology is becoming a budding interest of mine over the last 3 or 4 years. And so I started a podcast called American Songcatcher, where I take 5 songs, start with a traditional song, and then I go through a timeline all the way up until something that was written recently. Or somebody that is keeping old traditional songs alive, or a group that's doing that, keeping old songs alive and old styles alive. And it's a great time for me. I really, really enjoy this creative outlet, and I'd be honored if you would look it up yourselves. It's on pretty much every platform you can think of. And this tune was on the first episode because it kind of perfectly captures the transition from songs that came from emigration from the UK and folks that landed in the Appalachian Mountain Range, and how those songs kind of fused from English and Irish and Scottish sounds and molded together and kind of changed over time, although a lot of them didn't actually change too much, which is pretty cool that through that filtration process, they were able to hold their some of their value over hundreds and hundreds of years. So this tune is called Peggio. It was originally based off of a song called Bonnie Lass O'Fivey, which is a Scottish song. It comes from an area called Aberdeenshire, Scotland. And it's a fascinating sort of transition and adventure that it goes through before it pops up in mainstream America in the 50s and 60s with the first recording was by Bob Dylan in the United States, as well as Simon and Garfunkel and Joan Baez, and many, many people have recorded it. And this one's called Peggio. As we rode out to Fenario, the captain fell in love with a lady like a dove. He called her by her name, Pretty Peggio. Will you marry me, Pretty Peggio? Will you marry me, Pretty Peggio? Will you marry me? I'll set your cities free. Free all the ladies in the area. I would marry you, sweet William Moore. I would marry you, sweet William Moore. Now I'm gonna marry you, but your guineas are too few. I fear that my mom would be angry, oh. What would your mama think, Pretty Peggy, oh? What would your mama think, Pretty Peggy, oh? What would your mama think? She heard my guineas clink, and she saw me march at the head of my soldiers. Come stepping down the stairs, Pretty Peggy, oh. Come stepping down the stairs, Pretty Peggy, oh. Come stepping down the stairs, combing back your yellow hair, and bid a last farewell to you, William, oh. If I ever return, Pretty Peggy, oh. If I ever return, Pretty Peggy, oh. If I ever return, the cities I will burn, destroy all the ladies in the area. Sweet William, he is dead, Pretty Peggy, oh. Sweet William, he is dead, Pretty Peggy, oh. Sweet William, he is dead, and he died for a maid. Now he's buried in Louisiana country, oh. So we rode out to Fenario. We rode out to Fenario. The captain fell in love with a lady like a dove, and he called her by her name, Pretty Peggy, oh. Okay, so this next tune is an original. This was released on my last record, which was called As I Go Ramblin' Around. And I grew up in Columbus, Ohio, in the suburbs. And I thought of this particular person that I grew up with that was a longtime best friend. And although we still are friends, we're not as close as we used to be. And every time that I would go back, he still lives in Columbus, Ohio. And every time I go back there, we would end up getting quite drunk. And we would start talking about the old times, of course, as you do. And he would often say that middle school and high school were the best times of our lives. And I thought that was a bit of a crack up, but I understand that it's the truth for some people. And so I thought about this song based around that idea that, you know, all of your friends move away and you're still kind of living it up in the town that you grew up in. I'm sure this is the case for a lot of folks, and there's nothing wrong with it. I just thought it might be a good song. And he's a bit of a lush, so there is that aspect of this song as well. And this one is called Germantown. This was based off of an area of town called German Village in Columbus, and I just changed it to Germantown because I thought that was a better name for a song. And it goes like this. If I get too drunk while walking home from Germantown, I just click, click, clack down Brickell Roads, staring around. But all my fans need to see. I'm gonna start this song over actually. If I get too drunk while walking home from Germantown, I just click, click, clack down Brickell Roads, staring around. All my friends that used to live around the bend, they've grown up instead walking down the street, tipsy with me, obnoxiously screaming, I love Germantown. How I love Germantown. There's a gal I used to see. Back, then she took a cynical route. Yeah, but all that ends, I lead to somewhere again. Changes came and went. I'm walking down the street at night on repeat, obnoxiously screaming, yeah, I love Germantown. My, I love Germantown. Thank you. the people I've made, I cannot forget. All my friends that used to live around the bend, now I live going up instead. I'm walking down the street, tipsy with me, obnoxiously screaming. I love Germantown. I love Germantown.
On Scenic Roots, Live in the Library, our guest is Nicholas Edward Williams. Until recently, Nick and his wife spent much of the year on the road. But he and his wife have just had a son, and together with the pandemic, that has kept them both housebound for a while. For a time, he worked with a trio or quartet, but as he is this afternoon, Nick has been playing solo versions of his own songs, along with classic American country blues and Anglo-Celtic ballads for the past couple of years. You perform solo now.
Yeah, I think I'm opening up a bit more to wanting to incorporate some other instruments here and there, but as a standard, I want it to be known that it's just me, and then if there's another part of it, then that's a surprise, or that's just a kind of cherry on top sort of thing. Yeah,
because it seems to me that the what you're playing, you know, lends itself to that. It sounds as if Mississippi John Hurt has been quite an influence on your playing.
Very much so. More than, I would say more than any other guitar player, he has been the driving force behind a lot of other discoveries, people that I could branch off of from his style, and then kind of incorporating some elements that I learned from other styles into his style. So there's a lot of levels that I can work with, and also I think him as a person, learning more about his life and about who he was and what he represented and what, like, the kind of presence that he had on stage is something that I'm still striving to reach for in some small way, whatever I can. But yeah, I think there's a couple people that I've found through him that have been invaluable to what I do now. And I do think that it can be stripped down, because it is supposed to represent an older time when there wasn't overproduction and there wasn't more instrumentation. And also, these are where the songs start. And I think the minimum amount that I can add to it that doesn't take away from what you hear with just the guitar and vocals and, you know, stomping my foot should be
harmonica.
In harmonica and whistling and all that stuff. You know, trying to do it, it is a one-man band in a lot of ways, but it's not, it doesn't need a lot more, because I have the rhythm and I have the bass and I've got the melody and I've got all these in between factors too, that it doesn't require a lot more. I get why people want more also, and I think that it'll be fun to do more collaborations in the future with some folks around here.
Well,
especially
like Taj Mahal, I guess, for instance,
right? Yeah.
Where he has worked solo and then he's also worked with small groups, big bands.
Yeah. Going on tour with Cap Mo.
You can take it as
too.
Far as you want to, really, can't you, in terms of augmenting it and expanding it?
Yeah, I don't think it's limited to anything.
No, it doesn't seem to be. Do you write most of your material?
I've never co-written anything, so I've only understood how to write a full song by myself, and it's something that I think I want to work through at some point when I have the right circumstance and the right person. But it's such a personal thing to go through when you work out a song. It's one thing to have a song that kind of pops out of nowhere and you're just capturing whatever wind is passing by, and I know that that's a thing that needs to be honored in itself, but when you're working through a song and you're spending, you know, weeks or months looking at these lyrics and then redrafting and drafting and redrafting, and my personal I guess I'm still a bit of a control freak in that manner, where I really see its future from its start. And if I don't see its future, I'm open to discovering it myself. And I guess I need to soften around that, because I don't want to be a control freak about songs. And I know that there's plenty of value in having other eyes or other ears on stuff. I just haven't found that relationship before.
Did your podcast evolve from delving into this music and studying it, reading about it, listening to it?
Definitely. I was just thinking about this the other day. Without this pandemic, I probably would never have started it. I would still be doing what I was doing. You know, there's a lot of things that it afforded me. Obviously, more time with my wife while she was pregnant, and getting to be there for that whole experience and really being a part of it. And then obviously with our son, not having to feel like I need to jump around. The podcast has at least allowed me a little bit of leeway where I don't feel like I need to play out as much, which is great. But it definitely stemmed from my first mentor. Her name was Joan Crane, and she studied under a man named Andy Cohen, who was a shadow of Reverend Gary Davis. So what he took on from the Reverend and from many other blues players and many other pre-war players, he passed on to Joan, even though she had some of it already kind of in her. And when I started taking lessons with her about 3 years ago, I had never used a thumb pick, and I really didn't know what I was playing. I enjoyed playing different styles, but I didn't know what to call it, and I didn't know where it came from. And she was the first person to say, you know, this is a little bit more of your Texas Bill Brunsey style, or your Arkansas Bill Brunsey style, and this is more of your Delta blues, and this is more your Piedmont, your country, and kind of broke it down for me in a way that I could understand, and encouraged me enough that I had those styles. I just needed to separate them from each other. And when that happened, and when I had a thumb pick in my hand, everything completely expanded. And without her teaching me the invaluable lesson of, and she would say this at every single lesson, she would say, I just want you to play it forward. Just play it forward. She wanted me to make sure that I was carrying a torch that she was passed. And the invaluable, these songs and these foundational styles that have created the music that we love today, and how important it is to keep those things alive. And that is what the podcast is about. And it's about celebrating the people that are still doing it today. And it's about the people that carried it in between when the traditions started and when they were founded up until today, really. And yeah, the podcast is just celebrating all of that, and is giving light to it, and is in a more digestive way, where it's not so music history geek sort of, you know, where it's so much loaded information. It's a story that you listen to that you can kind of easily digest, and then over time it starts to unravel itself. And along with that, there's these kind of soundscapes and songs that lead the way and allow you to kind of understand slowly. And yeah, that's the point of the podcast, is just to bridge a gap for people that probably wouldn't otherwise be able to hear it or understand it.
Well, some of these songs have had an astonishing history.
Absolutely.
Through centuries.
Yeah.
And it strikes me that the impression I have of your podcast is a pretty deep dive.
It is.
You do your best to trace these songs back to where they originated, which is often in British Isles, right?
Absolutely. And it's, what's really hard is, you know, it's 30 plus hours per episode just to get the research part down and to fit the stories together in a way that is my own telling and also is accurate. And I try to work on a timeline so that I can kind of fit those pieces together in a strategic way. And the thing is, there's a lot of cross information out there that kind of overlap sometimes and doesn't line up. So I have to figure out who's credible and who's not credible. And then also on top of that, I have to figure out which is true and which is not true. And that takes just a lot of digging, but I really enjoy that part because I'm learning 90% of this information as I'm, you know, doing these stories. And the first time I'm telling him is on the podcast. So I'm excited when I'm telling him. although I want it to come across as a narrator, like an audiobook, or a, if you're listening to a Ken Burns documentary, I want that kind of feel. And so I have to kind of put on my podcast voice, you could say, and and really go through these deep dives. Yeah, some of the stories take 15 minutes of these artists, and I always try to figure out what their childhood was like, because that ends up telling so much about who they become as a person. And also all these interesting facts and things that are way, that are just lesser known, that get buried under in all these other kind of cliches and things that they get associated with. And a lot of those are necessarily not true also. So it is absolutely fascinating to me to learn, especially about a lot of the African-American struggles that happened before they became even semi-famous, before they were kind of buried underneath this other white musician who took their sound. So it's important to me. It's also topical, which is another level that I really enjoy. And it opens my eyes to a lot of things. And I think, you know, it's great when I can have somebody come up to me and say, oh, I thought the Animals wrote House of the Rising Sun. And I say, no, it's got a way longer history than that. You know, those things are really special to me, that I get to open some people's eyes as well as get them interested enough to learn about these stories. So,
how does that to impact the way you play these days? Do you think about the music differently now than you did before?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's more of an intention behind it. You know, I think I've been a feel player for a long time. I can't read music. I hear things and I try to emanate those sounds. And I feel like sometimes when I'm playing these songs and I know the history of it, I can kind of zoom out for myself and see myself playing them and see how I've evolved the song. And that's a difference that I never would have probably understood if I just kept playing the songs and not understanding where they came from. And it also gives me a chance to, there's a lot of songs that I've played for a long time that are written by other people, traditional songs or just songs that have been written before the 1970. And my version, I kind of constantly associate with the original version. And then sometimes I'll go back and listen to the original. I'll say, well, my version is a lot different actually. And that is a lot more apparent now too. Because I do have that scope, you could say, that I can zoom in and zoom out when I know the story about the song or the artist. So there is an intention that's different now. And there's also just a different feeling, and an understanding, I guess.
Yeah. I think at least part of what you're doing is contradicting the narrative that tends to be propagated by business concerns.
Yeah.
Copywriting and all that.
Right.
Where the history of music, when you start delving into it in these songs, Walking Blues comes to mind.
Yeah.
I'd always assumed that was Robert Johnson's song. But apparently it wasn't. It was Sunhouse's song first.
Right.
And then Robert Johnson took it and rewrote it a little bit, and as the Delta people tended to do. And everybody else, really, who's made music, whether it be these ballads that nobody knows who wrote them out of the British Isles, and they just, somebody sings it, somebody else hears it, and then they sing it. And there was a really interesting, I was listening to a show on the BBC a few years ago, and they were, as they have a tendency to do sometimes on the BBC, get really worked up about these rather arcane topics, you know. And the guy was really upset that the notion that you take this music that's truly folk music and sing it in concert halls. He said, that's doing those songs a disservice. Those songs are part of a kind of vernacular conversation for people in parts of the country.
Yeah.
And what that song is about means something to people in that part of the country that couldn't possibly mean to anybody else. For that matter, even if all you know about House of the Rising Sun is that it's about New Orleans, well, it becomes a different song almost immediately as soon as you know that.
It's absolutely.
Like, oh, really? Okay, so what is House of the Rising Sun? So it goes on, right? And then it becomes something more than a lyric. It's a story.
Absolutely.
About people's lives.
Yeah, and I think that, especially with the, you know, Peggy O coming from Bonnie Lasso Fivey, that was strategically about that area of Scotland. And it kind of as it meandered way, you know, down to England, it was pretty polio, and it got changed according to who wanted to sing it. Things I like the I like that idea of no ownership, and that's probably a big part of the draw to these traditionals too, is that there's no ego involved. To be a storyteller doesn't mean you're great at telling your own story. It means you need to be able to fit yourself into the shoes of somebody else and really see the truth behind their story and do as much research as you can. And that's a big joy behind this podcast, is I do get to do that, and I get to lift these voices that have been pushed down by many, many songs or many other artists and shine a light on them for a minute.
Well, this next song is relatively new, and I think I wrote it sometime early last year, and I've been a member of the YMCA in Hickson for a couple years now. And one time that I was there down in the men's locker room, I just noticed that there was kind of an odd amount of mirrors on the walls in the men's locker room. And I thought that was just a strange idea in general. Most men, especially older than 50, including myself, and I'm not over 50, don't necessarily want to walk around and keep looking at ourselves while we're naked. And I thought that was strange, of course, but then, you know, as a songwriter, you kind of take one thought and you start running down the rabbit hole with it. And I started thinking about all the ways that you can see yourself in a mirror and past versions of yourself and future versions, if you want, who you want to be, and if you're lucky enough, the exact present version of who you are. And so this is a song that contemplates all of that, and it's called Too Many Mirrors. There's too many mirrors. Oh, now who do I see? Too many mirrors. Oh, now who do I see? Am I looking at the past or the present me? As young as he thinks, I can see that fellow, not as young as he thinks, still diving at first just for a sip of a drink. Well, there's too many mirrors. Oh, now who do I see? Too many mirrors. Now who do I see? Am I looking at the past or the present me? I can see that fellow, he's not as young as he thinks. I can see that fellow, he's not as young as he thinks. Still diving at first just for a sip of a drink. Well, now am I right with all of my flaws? Very important. Am I right with all of my flaws? My personal gambles on my withdrawals. There's too many mirrors. Now who do I see? do I see? Am I looking at the past or the present me? This next song is featured in the third episode of the podcast that I started a few months ago called American Songcatcher that releases in a few weeks. And this particular tune has kind of a little bit more mystery shrouded around it. And it's believed that it was an old ballad called a broadside ballad that was brought over from England in the 1700s. But its origin is not specifically known. It did pop up, and the first two recordings of this song happened in the 1930s, first by a banjo player named Clarence Tom Ashley. And about 4 years later, a gal named Georgia Turner in Kentucky, Clarence was over in North Carolina, and Georgia was in Kentucky, and quite a lot of miles apart, you could say. But their versions were eerily similar to each other. And this has become quite a mystery of how this happened. It's thought that maybe since Clarence was a part of minstrel shows, which were traveling kind of vaudeville shows that would go and perform in different towns, that perhaps George heard a song, or this song, at one of those performances. But the local townspeople said that she didn't really travel much. And this is a very isolated town in Kentucky. So either way, her version was recorded and was passed around. It was recorded by Alan Lomax, who is a famous musicologist and archivist of folk songs. And he eventually recorded her and then sent the lyrics, put it into a pamphlet, and it was sent off to New York. And a bunch of folks heard it, like Pete Seeger and Bob Dylan. And now you have many, many versions, including the most popular version, which is The Animals. I'm going to do the Doc Watson version of that song, and then we're going to take it into a instrumental tune that was made famous by Chet Atkins and written by one of his friends called Windy and Warm. Down in New Orleans, they call the rising sun, and it's been the ruin of many poor boys. Know what I mean? Oh God, I'm one. My mother worked for a tailman. Yes, she sewed on my new blue jeans. And my daddy was, he was a gambling man, way down in New Orleans. The only thing that a gambler needs, Lord, he has a suitcase or a trunk. And the only time he is satisfied on hours when he's all drunk. I said, now, bird, run, run, mother, tell your children not to do the awful things that I've done. You spend your life in sin, a sweet misery, in the house of the rising sun. one foot on the platform, the other foot it's on the train. Said I'm going back to New Orleans, not to wear that ball and chain. Said there's a house down in New Orleans, oh, they call the Rising Sun, and it's there known many poor boys wanna be your God. I'm one. Oh, not me, oh God, I'm one. And not me, oh God, I'm windy and warm at the end there. That's House of the Rising Sun, a traditional tune. This is another tune that I wrote while I was in quarantine, kind of early on, I would say back in March, and when we were told to shelter in place. And I was witnessing a lot more positive things than I think most folks are, and I think I'm grateful and I'm lucky that somebody close to me didn't catch COVID and didn't pass away, and I don't want to make it seem like I don't want to acknowledge those folks. But this song was written kind of in the light of the positive things that I was seeing, and all these people that were sharing a community from afar over, you know, whether it was long distance sending packages or whether it was online and kind of creating community that way. And it also kind of fostered this anticipation to get out and live life in a way that is, you know, that you actually want to. And it kind of reset a lot of things for me personally and made me reshift my focus about what was important to me. And so that's what the spirit of this song is about. This one's called Shelter in Place. When there's trouble ahead and behind, hard times ain't subtle, They're a test of the mind. I know it's easier said than done to reframe and stay calm, to give up what you want. But I see that good among the craze. People wishing they could live up all the days, shelter in place. Maybe a kick in the tush was all we needed to reframe, to stay calm, to give up what you've won. Lord, and what I have, well, now it ain't much, but I feel like it's enough. But I see that good among the craze. People wishing they could live up all the days, shelter in place. Now surrender your mind, give up that ghost. Respect all humankind and tell the ones you love most to shelter in place. Tune by Mississippi John Hurt. This was one of the songs that he recorded for OK Records back in the 1920s that ended up getting added onto the Anthology of American Folk Music compilation series that was so integral in the 60s, 50s, 60s, and 70s folk movement, and also a part of the movement that's happening today. There's another resurgence of folk music and traditional music, which is really fantastic to be a part of. And this one is about the enigmatic figure that was the African-American hero John Henry, who was a steel-driving man kind of tasked with drilling large holes with his hammer so that they could blow up bits of rock and make tunnels for railroads. And it's thought that he was faster and could beat any man as well as machine. And when he was racing against a steam-powered machine, he in fact beat it, but his heart gave out from stress. And so he died with his hammer in his hand. This one's called Spike Driver Blues. John Henry was a steel-driving boy, but he went down, yeah, he went down, oh, he went down, take my hammer, won't you carry it to my captain? You can tell him I'm gone. Tell him I'm gone. Or tell him I'm gone. Oh, that's right. Down it's a long, long way from East Colorado, baby, to my home. To my home, to my home. Take my hammer, carry it to my captain. Tell him I'm gone. I tell him I'm gone. I'll tell him I'm gone. Oh. John Henry, he done lived. It's all painted in red, shining in red. John Henry's dead.
Nicholas Edward Williams recorded live in the studio in the Chattanooga Public Library. If you'd like to listen to his podcast, just Google Nicholas Edward Williams and American Songcatcher. This is Scenic Roots.